Let's get started. Okay, well, thank you all for taking the trek out here. There's water, if you want. And thanks for joining us for this presentation. The way we structured this presentation is we'll do an overview, since all of the abstracts are from one study, to give you a sense of that project, and then go through all of the presentations and then have questions at the end. Okay. So let me just go backwards. All of the data come from Project East. The rationale for Project East is that although racial and ethnic minorities have disproportionately high rates of HIV, these groups are underrepresented in HIV-related clinical trials. Geographic accessibility and other barriers are important influences on minority clinical trial participation, and barriers to research participation among minorities can be magnified among minorities that are living with HIV in rural communities. We know that more individuals living with HIV and AIDS live in the southeastern United States than any other region of the country, often in non-rural communities. The availability of AIDS clinical trials is particularly important in the rural South. And Project East has used the idea of mobile units as an innovative strategy for identifying and recruiting individuals with AIDS in more remote areas. A model to understand and address willingness to participate in research among rural minorities should include the individual, social networks, and community factors. The purpose of Project East is to increase HIV/AIDS clinical trials for rural minorities through the development of a culturally sensitive outreach and enrollment intervention. These are the six counties that we're working in Project East, and you'll see that they're in an area that's considered to be eastern North Carolina. The specific aims, or some of the aims of Project East, are to describe the community and individual factors that influence willingness to participate in HIV clinical trials and provide feedback on an outreach strategy that includes a mobile unit to increase HIV trial enrollment. Our methods included focus groups and individual interviews with service providers, community leaders, and individual interviews with people living with HIV and AIDS. And these are with individuals that were both English and Spanish speaking. Our community advisory board was recruited from these six county areas by a community outreach specialist. Our meetings take place quarterly in a neutral community location. Actually, we've just started to increase them to every other month with an in-person meeting followed by a conference call and an in-person meeting at the request of the CAB members. The CAB members gave consent at the very first CAB meeting to have the CAB meetings audio recorded and those transcripts used as data. For the focus groups and the individual interviews, the focus groups included community leaders and service providers, and those individuals were recruited also through the community outreach specialist and intentionally represented a cross section of the communities in terms of these characteristics. People living with HIV and AIDS were recruited through HIV case management and clinical care programs. They had to self-identify as African American or Latino, had to speak either English or Spanish, and reside in one of the six counties. For the qualitative data, each interview, focus group, or individual interview was audio taped and professionally transcribed, and our analysis all used the principles of grounded theory and content analysis. The text data was coded by teams of two coders that reviewed each transcript, developed and reconciled the development and application of the codes and the code book, a pretty rigorous process. So, as they nod their head. And once the code book was developed, then we went back and actually coded the interviews in teams of two coders with team meetings to reconcile any differences in coding. So this session, we have several presentations, five presentations. The first will be by Malika Roman Isler that talks about living with HIV in the rural South, an understanding of the physical and sociocultural barriers to care. Bobby Banks' abstract will focus on understanding HIV disclosure and the implications of that disclosure for African Americans and Latinos in the rural South. Malika will then come back and talk about two other sets of analyses, the perceptions, barriers, and facilitators to participation in clinical trials in our participants, and the perception of this mobile unit as a vehicle for clinical trial enrollment and participation. And then I'll describe a combined sociospatial methodology that we'll use to help us identify HIV risk that includes not only epidemiologic data, but also qualitative data in understanding the social and physical environmental contributors to HIV risk in these communities. And so our first presentation is Malika Roman Isler.
So again, this first presentation is looking at living with HIV/AIDS in rural North Carolina, and we're exploring the physical and sociocultural environmental barriers that were presented for accessing care. I have no personal financial relationships or with commercial interests to disclose. First, let's briefly examine the literature on barriers to care. Barriers to care inhibit the opportunity for collaborative recruitment into clinical trials. And when it comes to accessing care, compared to their urban counterparts, people within rural communities often report less privacy and assurance of confidentiality, concerns about stigma and disclosure, limited access to adequately or what they perceive as adequately trained medical personnel, or longer distances to travel to medical facilities, and a lack of personal transportation. They also talk about, in the literature, time away from work and the resultant lost income as a result from being out of work. And so what we're really interested in looking at with this analysis is understanding what is it that keeps PLWHA from engaging in care and resulting in less accessibility for clinical trial recruitment and participation. For this particular analysis, the data sources were the 35 individual interviews that we conducted with persons living with HIV and AIDS, and we audio taped and transcribed those sessions. In terms of analyses, the text data were analyzed in a back-forth approach between discovery and verification of findings, and we identified the core domains within those findings, the subcategories associated with those, and then the dimensions within each of those subcategories, which I'll go into more detail throughout this presentation. If we look at the environmental domains, there are many facets to the experience of living with HIV/AIDS in the rural South, and our data related to barriers to care that really fell into two domains, and that's the sociocultural environment and the physical environment. The sociocultural domain is further delineated into subcategories of care perceptions and confidentiality, and the physical environment was broken and comprised of issues related to transportation and access. And in this presentation, I'll be giving examples of the dimensions within each of these subcategories. So first, let's explore the sociocultural environment. Within the care perceptions subcategory, the first dimension was called what we called big city complex. And respondents discussed the fear of or uneasiness that sometimes rural residents face when experiencing or trying to access service at some of the major medical centers. And one quote that represents that: a lot of people, especially in the little small towns, big cities scare them. Those highways, those four-lane highways, when you cut, the way those fools be driving, that's really kind of scary. So that really presented a barrier to folks who weren't accustomed to being in some of those big, what they perceived as big cities, as a barrier to them accessing care there. The care perceptions category also had included issues of staff characteristics. And these included staff falling short in areas such as being compassionate or being able to make PLWHA feel comfortable when they're accessing care, that they really know what they're doing when they're providing care, that they remain confidential and can develop a one-on-one connection with PLWHA, that they present themselves professionally, and that they're diverse. And a representative quote with that is, everybody says that you know, well, we work with HIV and AIDS, still don't have the compassion that they need to do the job, because compassion goes further than just looking at the illness. It's got to do with the person and what they deal with on a daily basis, like just waking up in the morning. Now, some people I just don't trust. Now, you being black and working with minority people, I kind of trust you, so I'm more open to you. So that characteristic also mattered. The final dimension of care perceptions relates to ineffective or poor clinical treatment, which keeps PLWHA from engaging in care and can cause those already engaging to stop accessing care. One respondent stated that some of them stop, them referring to folks accessing care, some of them stop because they said the doctor's not doing this, not treating this. They can't see where they're doing no good. So not being able to see that the treatment is actually effective and is making a difference in their health status. The second sociocultural subcategory is confidentiality, you see here. And its first dimension includes examples of actual breaches of confidentiality. And many stories like this were told as we did data collection, but this one here is really an exemplar of how breaches take place and present a barrier to accessing care. Because I never told anybody I was sick. So I hear the doctor telling this woman that HIV can be treated and it doesn't mean it's the end. And so he just went on, and I was just listening to this conversation, and I'm thinking, well, that's really not a conversation to have right here because I can hear you. And when he finished talking, it was my mother standing there. That's how she found out. So I think that's a very strong example of how breaches in confidentiality present a barrier to accessing care. Confidentiality not only included actual breaches, but fear of breaches occurring, which plays just as important a role in preventing people who are positive from accessing care. Examples of that included running into people while you're receiving care and being exposed as HIV positive by being in that location, concerns that your paperwork is not kept confidential or the computers where your data, your information is stored is not confidential, and that the location itself becomes associated with HIV services and thereby reveals someone's status by them accessing services there. And here are two representative quotes related to that. The first is related to the computers. Anybody could have access to that computer, even though you say it's secured and anybody can get in them and find your files. Specific to the location, everybody knew that everybody that went in there was HIV. Everybody knows that that's an HIV house. So if they see you constantly going in, they already know you're positive. It takes away your privacy. And so this particular model shows the entire sociocultural domain, its subcategories, care perceptions, and confidentiality, and their associated dimensions, which I just went through and gave you examples of. The physical environment domain has as its first dimension transportation. Transportation is a major barrier both cited in the literature and that we found in our results as well, both within the local community and when accessing care at a major medical center. One respondent who had been asked to come to one of the major medical centers had this to say. It's outrageous if you have no way to get there, because I was sent a letter one time to participate in something up there at a major medical center to remain unnamed. Actually, I put in the bottom of the letter, how the hell am I supposed to get there? You all keep talking about I got to supply my own way. So transportation was a major issue for accessing care, particularly when it was outside of the local community. The subcategory access begins its dimensions with gaps in services or the comprehensive nature of services. Some of the gaps that they expressed were related to the lack of specific services or limitations on the existing services. And some of those service gaps included gaps in clinical care provision, insurance coverage, social support, housing assistance, food services. Some people even talked about having an HIV-specific hospital, mental health support, financial assistance, and even just basic information and education. One respondent actually spoke about the catch-22 of receiving disability assistance and how that's not really enough to survive with this quote. They don't want you to work and make extra money because it's going to affect what you get with that disability. It's not enough to live off of. Then you've got to come out of pocket just for medication to stay alive. Can't make but $600 or $700 a month. I mean, your medication's costing that much. You might have a car note, kids, stuff like that. So, I mean, it's like almost tossing them backwards. That was really interesting, because even when there is financial assistance available, the gaps in being able to provide for a holistic life didn't really seem to be present. The second dimension of access identified was inflexible and inconvenient hours, specifically as it relates to accessing HIV-specific care. One PLWHA stated, "A lot of the people out here, we don't have the same benefits as UNC Chapel Hill. Once the clinic is closed at night, you have to just go to a hospital and pray that somebody got some wisdom on HIV." And so this piece of the model demonstrates the physical environmental barriers to care and how that's broken down into issues of access and transportation and the associated dimensions there that I've just given examples of. So looking at the complete model, both with the physical environment on the left-hand side and the social-cultural environment on the right-hand side, PLWHA encounter a range of environmental barriers to accessing much-needed care, and both within their physical and socio-cultural environments. And this is what the complete model looks like. These findings have implications for practice related to the design of healthcare delivery systems. It helps us think about where we should locate them, the hours that they're provided, training that's necessary for staff who actually deliver services, and how to really consider confidentiality measures in a way that meets the need of those accessing the services. It also encourages those who deliver services to attend to the experiences of PLWHA based on what they perceive as barriers to participating in those services, not necessarily from the service provider perspective. These findings also support the need for and utility of alternative modes of service delivery, such as a mobile unit, which is the broader study, and to overcome some of these barriers, particularly those within the physical environment. Considering limitations, as there are with any research done, respondents we found often conflate research and care, when we asked them questions related to their perceptions about research versus care, for them they were really one and the same. They didn't really distinguish between the two, although we do from a research perspective, they were pretty much the same for them. And all respondents that were recruited had some affiliation with case management. Some were classified as in care, which means they had been within medical care within the last 6 months, or out of care, which means they hadn't been to the doctor within the last 6 months. And we don't know if there are some differences in the perceptions for those who have no case management affiliation at all. And so those are the limitations. And that's it for this one. Are there?
Let me pull up the next presentation. Okay. Our next presentation will be by Bobby Banks.